Good day and welcome to Public Health Matters, brought to you every month by the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. Tune in at noon on the third Saturday of every month for information that can help you lead a healthy life. And now, your hosts for Public Health Matters.
Good day, everyone, and thank you again for joining us on Public Health Matters. My name is Kevin Brennan. I'm the communications officer for the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. We're happy that you're here with us again today. I have my co-host with me, Suzanne Rush, who is our Director of External Affairs. Those of you who have been longtime listeners know that Suzanne and I have been doing this together for quite a while. She did take a little hiatus, but now she's back in a different role. So you won't see her necessarily in your food establishment doing your inspections anymore, but we do events out in the community and we were shaking hands and kissing babies and doing all those things. She will be in the front of the line. So we're very happy to have her back. Today we're going to be talking about MPOX. This is a topic that has become very relevant for us as a health department over the last handful of years. And actually, we are now seeing another resurgence here in the spring of 2024. So we're going to talk to the CCBH medical director, Dr. Prakash Ganesh. And Dr. Ganesh is going to give us an overview of MPOX. He has been with us throughout the entirety of MPOX, so he has a very good feel for the local situation. He's got a very good feel also for the way our agency is responding, so we'll have a pretty rich conversation with him. And then in the last segment of the show, we will be talking to the CCBH clinic supervisor, Gladys Harris. And Gladys has been with us for a little bit, and she is now looking to kind of take our clinic in a different direction in terms of raising our profile, kind of making us a little bit more utilitarian, making our access perhaps a little bit easier for people in the community. So we want to talk to Gladys about that and also particularly about how if you would come to our building and have concerns about MPOX, how we would help you. So those are the things we're going to talk about today. So first of all, I want to remind you how to get in touch with us. If you'd like to reach us on the internet, you can call or get in touch with us at ccbh.net. If you'd like to reach us by phone, 216-201-2000. If you'd like to reach our clinic, which we'll drop this number in a few times during the course of our conversation today, our clinic phone number is 216-201-2041. You can call that number for information. You can call that number to make an appointment. And if you'd like to make an appointment or get more information online, you can contact us at ccbhnurse@ccbh.net. So a lot of ways that you can get in touch with us. So, but first, let me give you a little background on Dr. Ganesh. So Suzanne and I both know Dr. Ganesh. He's been connected to the time that we've been here in a lot of different ways. But we've known him when he was a medical resident with Case Western Reserve University. And he was able to come to our agency for a lot of public health training that, you know, you typically don't get in the university setting. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But he was also very instrumental in guiding us through the difficulty that we had during the period of the COVID pandemic. Dr. Ganesh and a lot of his colleagues, fellow residents from Case Western Reserve University and other locations, were able to assist us and really were a tremendous asset to us during the pandemic. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But Dr. Ganesh, one of the interesting things that we want to talk to him about is his work overseas. He worked in Malawi for a number of years, and this was interesting because it was shortly after he worked with us here at the Board of Health, and then we didn't see him for 4 or 5 years. And we wondered, were we going to see Dr. Ganesh again? Then he came back, and he was so enriched by his experience, and he had a lot of things to share with us. So we're gonna drop that in, too. So I'm going to take a break here and hand it over to Suzanne, and so she can maybe get us kicked off here with Dr. Ganesh.
Hello, everyone. Thanks again for joining us. And we want to thank both Dr. Ganesh and Nurse Gladys. We're happy to have them. We have a number of wonderful public health medical experts here that can answer your questions, as Kevin said, when you contact us. So just to give some context, Dr. Ganesh, if you would, can you give us a brief history about MPOX?
Yeah, thank you, Suzanne and Kevin, for having me. You know, MPOX really jumped onto the stage here in the U.S. in 2022, when we had several cases started to pop up in New York, Los Angeles, some of our big urban centers, and then us in Cuyahoga County later on. I think our first cases were in the middle of 2022. But looking back historically, you know, we weren't very experienced with MPOX, and some of our earliest cases that we've identified in humans were in the 70s. So we had some familiarity, but never in the United States because it's never been endemic here.
So that gives us a brief on the history, which we appreciate. So now I think the question or concern for most folks is, how is it transmitted? What do they need to worry about in terms of person-to-person transmission?
So Mpox can be transmitted by close personal contact. The majority of cases have occurred with some sexual history to the transmission. So it can be transmitted through that skin-to-skin contact when there's a rash that is present. But oftentimes the symptoms, the hallmark of the symptoms is the rash. So being on the lookout for the rash for yourself or on others is very important.
Can a person be an asymptomatic carrier who's showing no signs or symptoms but does give Mpox to others?
I think that's currently being investigated. We don't have a lot of evidence that there is asymptomatic transmission, but it is new and it is being looked at by the CDC.
All right. So, Dr. Ganesh, I think one of the things that will help people become more familiar with Mpox, both visually and sort of to acclimate their minds to it, we want to talk about symptoms, right? We always, whenever we talk about illness, we always want to convey to people what the typical symptoms are so they know what to look for. So can you describe to us what people might be on the lookout for with Mpox?
Great question, Kevin. The main hallmark of Mpox is the rash, which can initially look like pimples or blisters and can be painful or itchy. So being able to identify that is very important. And sometimes this can be fever, chills, body aches, flu-like symptoms, which can occur before the rash starts and can kind of overlap with the rash. So looking out for that is important.
So the thing that kind of strikes me, Dr. Ganesh, is just as we know this with any communicable illness, not everyone who's affected gets treatment, right? Some people are confident enough or satisfied enough to think that they'll ride it out at home and whatever happens, happens. Can you talk a little bit about if Mpox is left untreated, what some of the short and long-term consequences could be?
That's a tough question. I think it depends on several factors and usually being able to ride it out. A lot of times, most people will be fine. This is a self-limiting disease and can resolve on its own, but limiting your exposure to others is key to limit the spread of the disease. But there are factors if people are have immune deficiencies or have immune system issues that could put them at more risk of more severe Mpox, which can be deadly for some.
So this is kind of like what we talked about during COVID, right? Like if people have if they're immunocompromised, if they're on other medications, if, you know, they have other conditions, that it could affect them much more severely than potentially someone who is healthier, we'll say.
Yes, exactly. And so that's why we also recommend a vaccine that is available for the treatment or the prevention of Mpox as well.
So speaking of vaccine, can you tell us a little bit about where vaccine might be available, when people should be getting it?
There is availability of vaccine at most of our major hospital systems locally, our community health centers. We also have vaccine available at the Cuyahoga County Board of Health and the Cleveland Department of Public Health. So, and we are also hosting vaccine events at various community places, such as the LGBT Center. I think there are also vaccine events occurring at Flex Spas as well.
All right, we want to remind you all that you're listening to Public Health Matters, brought to you by the Cuyahoga County Board of Health and Urban One. We are available by phone at 216-201-2000. You can reach our clinic, 216-201-2041, or you can email our clinic at ccbhnurse@ccbh.net. All right, so we're here talking about Mpox with Dr. Prakash Ganesh, who is the medical director for the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. So, Dr. Ganesh, as we get into a little bit more about sort of the background and the context for Mpox, what demographics at this stage are more at risk? Is there a defined population that we see that more cases are concentrated in versus others?
Currently, we are seeing cases in men or people who identify as gay, bisexual, or other same gender loving men who have sex with men. We I think it's that's kind of where we are seeing the cases right now, but it can easily be anybody that gets the infection. We have seen cases in various other groups. It's just right now, this is where we're seeing most of our cases.
So I can imagine, as it is with a lot of a communicable illness, right, there are a number of different ways that the illness can be transmitted and a lot of precautions we should be taking. So can you tell us from sort of like a behavior standpoint or day-to-day activities, what is safe to do versus what might be something that we want to think about?
I think, first of all, knowing the transmission rates in our area, just knowing that there is an outbreak going on is very important. So you can make some behavioral changes if needed. So short-term things could include like altering kind of your sex life and who you're having sexual encounters with, being more selective of who you are having sex with, using condoms, washing your hands. If you do know of somebody with MPOX, making sure that you're not sharing or using same towels, clothing, and avoid sex in places where it may be associated with MPOX transmission, or just limiting the number of new or multiple sex partners, and then also vaccine.
All right. So we'll get into this a little bit more, I think, when we have a larger conversation about vaccine in a few minutes. But the question I think that would come to my mind, first of all, would be we've gotten far enough down the road here. What comes to my mind is, can I get it more than once? Like, is this an illness where if I got it, like chicken pox, right? Because I know there's some sort of an association, which you being the doctor, I'll certainly let you explain. But chicken pox or mumps are one of those things traditionally we think we get it once and then we don't get it again, right? Does MPOX fall into that category?
I don't know yet. I think there's a lot of new information coming out. We're still looking. I know CDC is looking into the number of reoccurrences of people who've had the infection before, and then also looking at developing the disease after vaccination one and or two doses.
So one final question to follow up on that, Dr. Ganesh, would be, I just alluded to it. So there's a chicken pox, smallpox, MPOX, right? So what's the kind of commonality between those?
They're all similar, but they're very different. So having infection with chicken pox doesn't make you, or getting vaccinated against chicken pox doesn't make you immune to MPOX. So it's got to be clear. So it's got to be clear that you're not equate those. They are similar in terms of, I won't go into all the details of the names of the species, et cetera, but they are similar, I could say.
That makes sense. They all give you a pox or a symptom that might have to do with a blister or a small pimple-looking thing. So that makes sense, even though the diseases are separate and you're not having that universal protection. Definitely makes sense. So for folks that are otherwise healthy, if they would notice a rash or lesion that they weren't expecting to have all of a sudden, would you say it's okay to just treat themselves at home, or would you say that they should contact someone?
I think if somebody has a healthcare provider, discussing it with them is very important because that provider may know their risk factors, their other conditions, medications that the person is taking to help decipher if they are high risk of severe MPOX disease. So, and also may know their vaccination status. So being able to offer them treatment could be helpful for that person.
So once they understand that they are having lesions, they have something that's rash, could you speak to whether or not isolation would be something they should think about?
If somebody is concerned about the rash, isolation is paramount to make sure that you don't spread the disease. Discussing it with your provider so you can get testing would probably be the next step. Testing does take some time, so making sure you're staying in isolation to reduce that transmission while you're waiting for test results is also important.
Very good. So that's a good segue, Dr. Ganesh, because I wanted to go into testing next. So thanks for setting me up for that. I appreciate it. But what I wanted to talk about is, and I think I'll let you say this, but I know in public health, one of the things that we talk about is knowing your status, right? We certainly talk about that with any sort of communicable illness, particularly things like HIV. MPOX is another one that falls in that category. So can you just address from a general wellness standpoint, why is it so important that you get tested rather than staying at home and riding it out or choosing some other thing? Why is it important that you know what you're actually faced with?
I think having that knowledge helps prepare you to be able to prevent the spread of it to others, especially those that you live with or family or friends that you care about. So limiting their exposure as well. So being knowledgeable about your status and if you've been infected is pretty key to being able to mitigate that.
So now that we know that's important, what kind of options are there for testing? Like if somebody would come in, is it a one-time test? Is it a series of tests? Is it a you test me and I find out in an hour? Is it I find out in a week? Can you just kind of give us just an overview of what that might entail?
Testing is challenging. It does require a provider doing the test for you. It is a swab usually, so usually you're firmly testing that lesion, which can be painful for you or a patient. So it is a little uncomfortable depending on where the lesions may be. But there is no self-test, which is what I want to get at. And so you need to probably be seen by a provider because it is pretty hard to get testing. And the turnaround time of a test is quite long. It's because they have to, what we do is a PCR test or a polymerase chain reaction test that has to multiply the genetic material of what they find in the lesion. So that's the challenge. And so that turnaround time is quite long, it can be 3-4 days or sometimes longer.
So you said that there would be some time lapse between when a lesions appear and they could be swabbed and tested, which may or may not be this uncomfortable, maybe itchy, that sort of thing. And there's some other symptoms you mentioned like body aches, fever, that sort of thing. So if a person has a symptom, they bother to get tested, which is a wonderful idea, so they can be informed and they can keep their family in close contact safe. What should they be doing as far as safe practices between the time they're tested and they get their results?
To limit the spread of the disease, if you think you have Mpox, staying isolated is important, but I know it's not always easy to do. Wearing a mask if you're around others, washing hands regularly, not having others possibly having your own bathroom. Masking could be helpful because we're still looking into if it could be respiratorily spread. There is evidence that can happen, but I think we're still trying to figure out more details about it. So all those things that we've learned during COVID, I think could be helpful here too. And then also making sure safe sex practices.
All right, very good. Again, to remind you, you're listening to Public Health Matters brought to you by the Cuyahoga County Board of Health and Urban One. We are happy to be here with you today talking with Dr. Prakash Ganesh, the medical director for the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. So Dr. Ganesh, if we could take a break just for a minute from Mpox and kind of talk a little bit about some of your past experiences, because I think you, as we opened the show with, we talked about the fact that you've been connected to our agency for quite a while in a variety of different ways. I don't want to be overly sentimental and ask you, so how did you get to be a doctor and why did you? Well, we're not going to do that with you today. But what I did want to ask you is in terms of your experiences now related to public health, now that you've been connected with us through Case Western Reserve University. And now that we've had that experience, and you, I think I would speak for you and maybe some of your colleagues, because I know that Suzanne and I have been interacting with your university and the residency program for several years. And we've gotten a lot of feedback about the value, I think, that it brings to the doctors in terms of getting you actual on-the-ground experience in a public health environment. So without getting too broad with that, can you just talk about maybe the value that brought maybe during COVID and here with Mpox, how this is all translating to make you maybe more effective in helping us?
Yeah, so just a little bit of background. Our residency in preventive medicine at university hospitals has been closely linked to Cuyahoga County Board of Health for many years. And during my training, I had the fortunate opportunity to rotate with you guys and learn about communications amongst other things at the health department. And I found it very beneficial because it was a breakaway from the hospital. I got to learn about public health and dealing with population health versus just the patient in front of me. Although I think that is a very important relationship and informs my public health kind of view, I think both inform the other. So my public health and population health informs my direct patient interactions as well. So I found my public health training to be so important into what I moved on to after that, and also coming back and helping run the residency and working at Cuyahoga County Board of Health as well.
We say in public health that we're a bunch of scientists that love science a lot, but we love people even more. And when we connect to populations, especially underserved populations, that's hugely important. Could you speak a little bit of the importance of someone finding a provider that they feel comfortable with?
It's often very difficult to find the right provider for you. I still haven't found my right provider. but there are many instances that people may not feel comfortable with the specific person in front of them, but having that trusted primary care provider is so valuable, especially in a time that we have so much lack of so much misinformation, disinformation, so much information on the internet that people are turning to. So having that person who kind of questions off is very important. And that's how I've been able to fight misinformation and vaccine hesitancy, for example, has been within my patient panel and just talking to them one-on-one based on that relationship I've had.
And anything that we would tell you about our clinicians here, be it the doctors, the nurse practitioner, or any of our nurses, they're so helpful and they're so committed to meeting the patient where they are. We focus on people-centered care. And the big idea for us is that everyone in our jurisdiction or beyond, we have folks from out of county, out of state even, that will call and ask questions. Our nurses, our docs are very reliable. And we never want you to feel judged. We want you to feel like it's a welcome place for any kind of question. If you have a medical issue, even if we don't provide the service, we are oftentimes a conduit of information. Like, we get you to the place you need to go if we don't offer the service here at the board. So if you haven't already heard about it, we do have an Eastside location for reproductive health and sexually transmitted infections that's over near South Point Hospital. And we, of course, have our clinic here at the office in Parma on the west side. So moving back to Kevin real quickly.
So Dr. Ganesh, we were talking about obviously the value of the residency program and the value that it brings both to Case Western, to you as the participants, and to us here at the health department. But you're also connected to another residency program through University Hospitals that you wanted to speak a little bit about.
Yeah, we do our residency that we offer in preventive medicine. We are one of two in the country in combined family medicine and preventive medicine. As of right now, we are not recruiting anymore for preventive or that combined program because University Hospitals has shut down the family medicine program. And that will be effective over the next, we're kind of phasing out our current residents. It has been kind of a blow and setback for our residency. We still have our preventive medicine residency, but that combined program, which was just one of two programs in the country, will be closing down for now, which I think is a detriment because that was a program I went through, and having that primary care experience and population health experience was so vital for me. And what I was speaking about before, just that relationship, that primary care relationship that is, I think, undervalued, just like public health. I think that's been kind of the trend and what we've seen happen at University Hospitals.
All right. So let's take now what we've spoken about and give everyone a very pertinent example of where you applied a lot of this knowledge and a lot of this experience. And that was when you went overseas and you went to a country known as Malawi and you spent 4 years there. And principally, you were working in a refugee camp providing care at a tertiary hospital, right? And you were supervising other clinicians and trying to bring wellness. So I don't want to tell the story for you, but just setting the table like that. So going to a foreign country, having the responsibility, going there for an extended period of time, and then having to work in a site that is not a primary location, right? So you've got some intriguing things and you've got some inherent disadvantages facing you, unfortunately. But can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, of course. I'm happy to elaborate on that. It was it was a very eye-opening experience. I learned a lot. I grew a lot, but also got burned out a lot. When I first got there, I worked primarily in a refugee camp and the main teaching hospital. I ran a team that did inpatient medicine for the internal medicine teams. So I rounded and saw the patients on the ward and taught medical students. But then I also went to a refugee camp, and I was kind of hosted through the UN High Commission of Refugees. And this was a camp an hour away from the city that housed about 20,000 people. It was a pretty rough camp. There was no power. They had refugees from all over, from the DRC, Burundi, Somalia, economic refugees from Ethiopia, and a lot of them didn't have any services. So it was hard work, and I felt like I was of no use to them, and it was really hard to give them medication and treat them kind of long term. But I soon was hired by University of Washington, and I was seconded to a Malawian organization, which was primarily an HIV clinic. And my job was to teach mid-level providers or advanced practice practitioners. These are nurse practitioners, PA equivalents. And I was supposed to train them in HIV and tuberculosis. And I managed one of the main tuberculosis wards for the central region of Malawi. And it was kind of on-the-job training for them. And then I also represented our organization at national meetings and those types of venues.
It's wonderful that you share those experiences, because I think being homegrown, living and working around us for quite a while, we take for granted that our docs and our nurses here, from our lens, what we've done in the Board of Health recently, we don't necessarily know all the wealth of experience they bring. And working in those horrible conditions, in that you didn't even necessarily have power, you didn't have medications you needed or expertise, the fact that you could, you know, triage in real time, help people, that's wonderful. We admire that work. All right, so we're going to segue back to more recently and say, getting back to MPOX, there was a situation in 2022 that raised awareness and came to the forefront that, wow, we have something going on here. We hadn't seen MPOX since the 70s. Could you speak to that?
We were closely watching as the outbreak was developing in European cities and then in New York and some of our major metropolitan areas. And we were just anticipating when we would get it locally. And once we started getting one case, we started being not sure what to do exactly. And we weren't sure what vaccine, like, I don't think we were talking about vaccine as much then. We also didn't have treatment available, and we also didn't have testing modalities readily available. So all of those things took us time to figure out what to do.
So then we segue to the Board of Health issuing a health advisory in April of 2024. What were some of the factors that led up to that?
We kind of had a sense that we were now living with MPOX locally, but we started seeing an uptick of cases and much more than was at the baseline, because we had a quiet time from about end of 2022, beginning of 2023, until the beginning of 2024, where we started seeing more cases. We were kind of watching what was happening in other cities, big cities in Ohio, like Columbus, and we were seeing cases here and there more than locally. But once we started seeing much more cases kind of ramp up, we started issuing health advisories and making sure that we brought together our same providers and groups that we were in touch with from the previous outbreak.
All right. So what we've got to be, I think, mindful of now is there's certainly a physical component to this illness that we've talked about in some depth here. But there's also now there's a mental component to this, and there's a perceptive component to this. And what I'd like you to discuss with me, if you would, Dr. Ganesh, is the stigma that we have seen surrounding MPOX. I don't know that we really saw it necessarily before 2022, but it seems to have just steadily grown a little bit over time, where people have, I think, now some kind of firm perceptions about what they think about it. And I don't believe all those are actually correct. So would you mind, from a medical standpoint, telling us, in terms of who can be affected, but then the negativity or the impact they can have on somebody who's going through the illness, if they're feeling stigmatized or they're feeling like the burden of having the illness on top of just actually experiencing the illness.
I think that's a very important question, and it has been challenging to discuss like openly, like on the news or wherever it may be. But I think it's very harmful for those that may be suffering from the disease, because they basically have to do it alone if they don't feel comfortable coming out about it. It can help propagate the disease and lead to more infections because people are not talking about it or getting tested about it from it for it. So I think it, and then also on the provider side, like if we all have our own biases, but if we don't know kind of that anybody can get affected or infected, we limit who we're testing for these things. So if I see somebody that doesn't fit the specific demographic where we've been seeing these cases, that really limits my ability to help this person and say that I missed the diagnosis on somebody that could have been positive for Mpox.
That strikes me a lot, Dr. Ganesh, sort of like what the two of us and the larger agency went through when we would talk about COVID a lot, right? We'd have people who would call themselves non-believers, right? And I think when we talk about the science and the data, we know that just as sure as the sun's coming up the next day, COVID's going to be here the next day, right? It's not something that you have the option to believe in. It is something that people may choose not to address or not to get behind or whatever, but it's going to be there. So it's kind of the same thing with this, in that, you know, people can deny the fact that, you know, anyone can contract Mpox, but it is the truth, right? Much like with COVID, people thought if they just didn't go certain places or do certain things or be with certain kinds of people, they were immune from COVID. And we know that not to be true. So when we talk about the stigma, you as a provider, can you talk to me just in general terms, how do you counsel a patient to kind of get them to be at ease, you know, to be more amenable to treatment, and also to make them feel like you're a partner with them, right? You're their medical provider, so you're kind of partnering with them to get them through this. How do you put someone at ease in that situation?
I try to be objective, but understanding of what's happening and how they may feel. I try to focus on the facts instead of going over what may have happened and how they were exposed. I just try to move forward in terms of offering them the best medical advice at that time. And so I kind of let go of whatever conceptions I may have about how they got infected or any of those factors. That it's not really important at the time that I'm seeing them. And people are often scared, and trying to help alleviate that worry is kind of my priority.
All right. So just to reiterate, folks, Mpox is not just an LGBTQ plus disease, illness, infection, however we want to say it. Anyone is at risk. And as Dr. Ganesh mentioned before, if you're sharing clothing, if you're sharing towels, if you're sharing utensils, if you're having intimate contact, you're engaging in behavior that could put you at higher risk. So we want to just make sure that, you know, we inform you as fully as we can, just to try to take all the precautions that you can to keep yourself safe. And just to remind you again, we are here as the Cuyahoga County Board of Health 24/7. So if you call us and you have an emergency after hours, which would for us, we are open 8:30 to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you have an emergency after 4:30 p.m., please call us at 216-201-2000. Listen to the message, and then you'll be prompted to contact someone who will have what we call our emergency phone. And the person who's handling the emergency phone will provide you with guidance, get an answer to your question, and will follow up. So we do ask, though, that you keep that to an emergency condition, because oftentimes we have to connect with people or agencies or organizations that can be very difficult to connect with after hours. So if you do have an emergency, please bring it forward. If it can wait, give us a call the next day, though, 216-201-2000. We're available Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And if you'd like to find us on the internet, we are at ccbh.net. If you want to find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And if you want to email us at our clinic, you can get in touch with us at ccbhnurse@ccbh.net or call our clinic directly, 216-201-41.
Dr. Ness, you alluded earlier to the fact that when these cases started in 2022, we didn't have a reliable vaccine on the ready. We were just starting to see cases in the U.S. and then saw some here. Is there a reliable vaccine now?
Yes, I'm glad you asked. I alluded to it in various in my other responses, but there is a Jynneos vaccine. It has been studied now for the last 2 years, I guess, and it can be pretty effective. No vaccine is 100% effective, but it can prevent Mpox transmission. It can also prevent severe disease. There are various studies looking at how effective it is overall, but the most effective it is after 2 weeks after the second dose. So it's a two-dose series, 4 weeks apart. And we're still looking at how long that vaccine or that immunity lasts after the second dose.
All right. So, Dr. Ganesh, I see when I look at some of the instructions on the Ohio Department of Health website or the Center for Disease Control's website, there are two words that I understand because I work in public health, but I don't know that everybody else will. When we talk about injections, they list them as being intradermal or subcutaneous. So could you translate that for us and tell us what that means?
So I would just say, to make it simple, we're talking about a subcutaneous, going to be going right under the skin, all the layers of the skin, and an intradermal dose is going to go kind of in between those layers. And that just, there's various studies that have shown how to best deliver certain types of vaccines. And for Jynneos, which is the Mpox vaccine, it's best given either subdermally, which is a larger volume, and then or intradermally, which is a smaller volume, between the layers of the skin.
And the great news when you deal with any of the CCBH providers, because they work in several areas as clinicians, they give a lot of vaccine and a lot of immunization. Let me tell you, if you're going to get a shot that doesn't hurt or doesn't hurt much, these are your people, because we get our flu shots and COVID shots here. We get our Shingrix when we need it. We get the kinds of things that we need here at the Board of Health. And I can tell you, we have a bunch of wimps here on staff, and they will say, oh, my goodness, they're going to hurt me. And really, they don't. They do a fantastic job. They're great with kids. They're great with adults. So whenever you have questions about any immunizations, we'll talk more about it, or vaccines. We've got great providers here.
So, Dr. Ganesh, going back to my communications mind, I think, so there are similarities because it's an outbreak situation. We're raising public awareness, right? We're trying to mitigate or prevent further outbreak. So it kind of strikes me like COVID, in that you talk about the two doses of the vaccine, right? And the period of time. Are we at the point now, since we go back to 2022 for our first kind of local exposure to all of this, are we at the point now where we think we need boosters beyond the two doses, or is that sort of inconclusive yet?
That is something that is still being studied. There is some previous reports that people who are continuously exposed should be boosted and can be boosted 2 to 10 years after, which is a very wide range. But for the general public right now, the CDC is recommending that we do not boost those that are in the community, and not, like, I think those previous reports were for people who are like laboratory personnel. But I think we have to look at it by a patient-to-patient like kind of risk assessment, because I don't have any evidence to suggest that immunity wanes from the vaccine right now, but it is being studied.
One of the things we always try to do here at the Board of Health is give a comprehensive response to any situation. And Dr. Ganesh and certainly Nurse Harris both do that with us. They talk about behavior changes. They talk about, you know, really reading up on and being aware of what your options are. They talk about testing for status updates. There's a lot of things folks can do. Safe sex practices are certainly one of them if it's going to involve skin-to-skin contact. But even general hygienic practices like frequent, thorough hand washing, things like teaching small children and young adults not to share beverage containers, towels, things like that. There's so many communicable diseases, more than just MPOX, that can be transmitted person to person. When I was a young sanitarian working in public health, we had a cluster of mononucleosis, mono, going from person to person in a child care setting. And it was just a practice that the child care was sharing a lot of things. There was a lip gloss being passed around like candy, and everybody was putting their mouth on it, and boom, mono went to small children from an adult. So just being careful and being aware of hygienic practices and general sanitation, and both our website, ccbh.net and cdc.gov, we have lots and lots of information about prevention of communicable disease and hand hygiene. Always good practices.
So Dr. Ganesh, we're going to wrap it up with you and move on to speaking with Gladys, but I just wanted to give you the last word here in terms of whether you want to speak to kind of some of the things we're doing here at CCBH, or, you know, some additional guidance you may have for people. But I think we've done a pretty good job, I think, of setting the context, so I feel like we've informed people. But any last words that you may have?
I would just add that we are working with and being informed by a lot of local community partners, and we are doing local vaccine events and trying to get their input to direct, like, how we deliver vaccination and other information to make sure that there's equitable distribution of vaccine, but also information.
Excellent. So again, folks, that was the medical director for the Cuyahoga County Board of Health, Dr. Prakash Ganesh. We thank Dr. Ganesh for his time and his effort here today. He's been a real benefit to our staff, and we really appreciate the work that he's done. So now we're going to introduce you to somebody else on our staff, and we're going to now talk with Gladys Harris, who is relatively new as our clinic supervisor. So maybe to her benefit or maybe not, Gladys wasn't here during COVID, so she got to experience COVID at a different place. But we all, in terms of providing healthcare and being agents of public health, we all, we all had similar experiences, and we're all just glad that we came out on the other side and that there are more of us still here. So, but when we look at Gladys's resume, she is very well versed. She got her Bachelor of Science in nursing from Ursuline College. She's worked at university hospitals. She's been an instructor at Cuyahoga Community College. She even took a step back, or not a step back, but a little step back in time, because she used to work with us as a newborn home visiting nurse, which I'll let her tell you a little bit about that. But then she separated from us and went on to a pretty extensive period of time where she spent with the Cleveland Clinic. And one of the things that's very interesting is she was an informatics specialist. So Gladys is a unique combination in terms of public health and somebody who's got both the clinical chops and the data chops. So that's we really appreciate her, what she brings to our staff in terms of that. So Gladys, we want to welcome you and say thank you for being here. So let's talk a little bit about what you do related to MPOX. Okay. So say that I'm a person who was around somebody who I think had MPOX, and I may not have had intimate contact with them, but I had close contact with them, let's say, right? So now I'm not sure what I should be doing, because now I've listened to the show and I've heard Dr. Ganesh talk. I'm going to hear you talk. I've heard Suzanne talk. I'm not sure really what I should do, but I think I need help. That the impression I'm getting is that I need to do something, correct? So when somebody calls, say that somebody would call to the clinic and they would get you or one of our nurses. So how does that encounter go?
Hello. Thanks, Kevin. What the first encounter would be like is they would call our clinic, and we would first advise them to come in to be tested. We have testing locations in Warrensville, and we have a testing location here in Parma. Here in Parma, it's on Tuesday, and Warrensville, it's on Friday. And we would suggest they set up an appointment to be tested so our staff can be safe when they are coming in contact with that patient. As well, we can keep that patient safe and confidential and have the spaces between appointments so they can have complete confidentiality in disclosing what they've come in contact with and how they've been.
Great. So they would call in, and who are the types of folks that would be helping them?
Thanks, Suzanne. The people that would be helping them is our medical secretaries. They would first come in contact by phone with the medical secretaries to get their appointment scheduled. And then if they have questions, medical questions, the medical secretary doesn't have a medical background. So therefore, they could be easily speak with a nurse over the phone to get questions answered. If they have more complicated scheduling issues, then of course me, I can get on to help them to get a time slot and to ensure confidentiality.
Terrific. So they get to talk to a medical provider, answer questions, even if they have other questions not related to Mpox, they can answer those. I know for folks who are immunocompromised with other diseases, let's say they have cancer or they have some immune deficiency, they're going to have some special questions or questions about medications. And we have a nurse practitioner or nurses available to tackle those. So that's terrific. Let's talk about who can get help. Let's say I'm not sure if I'm eligible or not to receive help. Could you speak to that?
Yes. Everyone is eligible to get help. At Cuyahoga County, we see everyone. Of course, there are, if you're not financially secure and you can come to our clinic and you have insurance, that's always an option, but we can see any and everyone in the clinic.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. We don't ever want to turn anybody away, right? It's an ability to pay, right? We tell everybody, if you have insurance, that's great. If you have Medicaid, that's great. And if you don't have insurance, we'll work with you and make sure that you get the service that you need, right? We won't turn anybody away. So getting back to Mpox, Gladys, there's some different things that come into my mind. I want to talk to somebody. I might need to be tested. I might need to get a vaccine. I might need to understand, what do I do, what Dr. Ganesh told us, what kind of things do I do at home, right, if I'm isolating or if I'm waiting for my test results to come back, right? I've got an interim period I have to wait. So you can intersect with people at a lot of different points, but the thing I'm trying to get to is you can also just sit down and talk to somebody, right? If people can call you just for advice to get some clarity and some definitional support, correct?
Absolutely, Kevin. First and foremost, we would definitely recommend the client refer to their primary care provider and please follow up with them first. However, we are a very, very nice segue between the primary care provider or having to go to the emergency department if it becomes necessary. And on the phone, we feel that it's the medical secretary may feel that it's a little bit more escalated and they need to go. Of course, that's what we would recommend. However, we are a great alternative. You can come here to be tested, and we will ensure you guys have the best privacy and confidentiality and confidence in the care you're receiving.
It's great to acknowledge that because with some of these things, especially if someone finds a mark on their body, especially if it happens to be in a private area, they may feel self-conscious, and our professionals here keep the information on the professional level that makes them feel comfortable. They can ask questions openly and they have confidence that they're getting sound medical advice and privacy. And we do often speak about providers or medical practitioners, and folks will say, but I don't have one, or I can't afford one, or I don't have insurance, or I'm confused. We certainly can be a conduit of information. After all, we call ourselves the trusted source for public health information. But we also want to talk about our partners at United Way's First Call for Help. You can have providers available to you and free or low-cost insurance based on a sliding scale. And this covers prescriptions. It covers medical medications. Medical equipment, different things that you might need, including transportation to and from appointments, child care for during an appointment if you needed it. So you can call 211 on any cell phone or landline and get to medical help that way. Have your photo or, you know, your driver's license or state ID ready because that's how they identify you. But it's a great resource, and we do refer folks all the time to 211.
Great reminder, Suzanne. Thank you. So Gladys, another question would be, so say that I'm coming in, as I described, to talk about Mpox, and I want to do it face-to-face. So what kind of things, without getting too specific, what are the general kind of things that you're going to need to know so that you can decide, first of all, what kind of help I need, and then if we don't provide the help at our clinic, how you make the decision to direct somebody somewhere else?
Thanks, Kevin. First and foremost, we would want to know how you're feeling. If you're seeing a rash, are you understanding or noticing that you have a temperature? And those things would be very, very important to disclose at the medical, at the making the appointment time. And if that's the case, you would see a nurse and the nurse would be in protective clothing and they would come out to escort you, maybe give you a mask so that you're not transmitting to walking down the hall to your room. And that's pretty much it.
Very good. All right. So there's a reminder for you folks. If you need to get in touch with Gladys or any other lovely nurses at our clinic, you can call us at 216-20141. You can email us at ccbhnurse@ccbh.net. And you can call us directly at 216-201-2000. So Gladys, I just wanted to ask you one more question to wrap up. So when we talk about Mpox, this can certainly lead to another discussion potentially about things like family planning, reproductive health. So those are services that we offer, things that we can help people with, correct?
Yes, those are services we can help you with. And again, those appointments are typically on Tuesdays and Fridays in our South Point office and in our PERMA office. And we can help with anything from family planning, reproductive health services. We have wonderful nurse practitioners here who can see you, they can prescribe birth control, they can place IUDs, they can talk to you and counsel you about getting pregnant, extending your family, and those are just a few of the services we offer. Just give us a call at the clinic and we can help you to get your family planning underway.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Gladys. A reminder, that is Gladys Harris, our clinical supervisor here at the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. And I'll do Gladys a solid here by asking you not to walk in for an appointment at our clinic just because of the volume. And it's not that we don't want to see you and we don't welcome you and we don't want you to get the service you need, but because of the volume of the number of people that come to see us, we have to put people on appointments. So please, 216-201-2041 or ccbhnurse@ccbh.net. And that will keep everything quiet and we won't get Suzanne and I in trouble because we're giving you the fair warning. So, but please, they can turn around your appointment pretty quickly and it'll be worth the wait. Gladys and her staff are very helpful. And Dr. Ganesh helps provide guidance there. So you're in very good hands if you come to see us. So we just want to give you that reassurance. As Suzanne said, and as our tagline says, we are your trusted source for public health information, and we want to remain in that seat. And with people like Dr. Ganesh and Gladys, that will help us get down the road to you about a couple of things. You can find us on the internet at ccbh.net. You can find us on social media, on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. And to let you know also, for those of you who follow us, which there might be a handful of you out there, but even so, we want to let you know that we will be revising our website soon. So as we get down probably around the end of summer or beginning of fall, we're going to present a fresh look for you at ccbh.net. One of the things I would encourage you to go find right now would be our dashboard. We have a data dashboard that will provide information for you about Mpox. So you can actually go see the number of cases here locally. You're also going to see the number of cases that are officially reported and recorded by the Cleveland Department of Public Health, because we show the regional view or just a singular view. You can see, and if you look, you'll see what Dr. Ganesh alluded to, that in 2022 we had a tremendous amount of activity, and in 2023 it waned, and then here at the beginning of 2024 we picked up again. So you can actually see that illustrated. We have an HIV and STI dashboard, which will give you an insight into local situations. We have local flu surveillance reports, and we also still have our COVID dashboard. So if you need information about communicable illness in Cuyahoga County, please visit us at ccbh.net, and we can help you find what you need. And to remind you again, if you don't find what you need and you still have questions, please call our main number, 216-201-2000. So we're going to wrap up for today. Thank you all for listening to Public Health Matters, which is brought to you by the Cuyahoga County Board of Health and Urban One. And thank my co-host, Suzanne Rush, our Director of External Affairs. Thank Dr. Prakash Ganesh, CCBH Medical Director. And thank Gladys Harris, our CCBH Clinic Supervisor. Thank you all for coming. Thank you all for making the effort. Please give us a call. We look forward to hearing from you, and we will connect with you next time on Public Health Matters.
This has been Public Health Matters, brought to you every month by the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. For more information about today's topics and more, you can always visit the Cuyahoga County Board of Health online at ccbh.net. Tune in on the third Saturday of next month at 12 noon for the next edition of Public Health Matters.